It's the Shay Anything Podcast. Doug Williams back alongside Nelson Figueroa in studio. On the phone, we have my normal co-host, Andy Martino, who is in Port St. Lucie on what's already been a fairly busy day. Got Jed Lowry's banged up. Mickey Callaway already met with the media. Andy, though, big news, obviously yesterday into today, Manny Machado signing with the Padres. Your assignment, part of it yesterday for the network, was to kind of talk about how that affects the Mets and potentially down the line, obviously, the Phillies. What was your reaction, and how important do you think Manny Machado's decision was for the Mets moving forward?
I think it was great news for the Mets. I think that better news for the Mets would have been them signing Manny Machado, but given that that wasn't happening, look, keeping him out of the division is more important than keeping Harper out of the division. He's better. The Mets people have been hoping that Machado did not go to Philly. We're happy when he didn't. And now they don't have to deal with him much. I think that's significant with what Philly's trying to do and that they lost out on him. And the fact that this amazing two-way player, platinum glove third baseman, top five offensive player, is not on the Phillies is a nice little day for the Mets.
So you've also reported, though, that the Phillies, obviously now you'd think they'd attempt to do whatever they could to bring in Bryce Harper. You've reported that the Phillies may have an uphill climb in terms of bringing Harper in now. What can you tell us there?
Yeah, look, I think the problem's on two sides there. Harper's trying to get to $326 million minimum, I'm told, because guess who makes $325? You know?
Wow. $326 million. That's such a – it just feels like a Scott Boris thing. Like,
yeah, just to have well,
look,
contract.
I think $326, significant obviously for him because Stanton makes $325, and that's the competitive nature of the offseason. The agents are competitors. Players are competitors when it comes to money. So that's important. And so the point I was making was, look, maybe this is all old news by the time this airs. Hopefully not, because anything can happen. But I don't think the Phillies are that eager to go that high, necessarily. I wouldn't rule it out. And I'm confident that Bryce Harper doesn't really want to play in Philly. And it would take a lot of money to convince him. So, but you know what? The larger picture is that the Mets have been competing against Bryce Harper for years. And it's not fair to put – baseball's a team game, obviously, but say that him in the division means you're screwed. Well, he's been in the division.
Right.
And to me, the Mets – and I've talked to Mets people about this. They would rather see Harper go to Philly than they would see him go to Washington because Philly's not that good. Like, they've got some really good players now, but they're not championship-ready necessarily. And the Nationals are a championship-caliber team, so if they add Bryce Harper – that's more problematic for the Mets, I think, and they think, than if he goes to Philly.
Before we go back to Andy, I want to ask you, so the 326 thing, the whole I need to make a little bit more than Giancarlo Stanton, I need to have the biggest contract, is that, we keep hearing all this about agents. Is that agents, do you think, or is that the ego of the player?
I think it's a combination of both, and if it's a 10-year deal, what's $2.6 million per year? Nothing. You know
right.
what I mean? So if you're looking at it that way, that $2.6 million, look how much money the Nationals deferred on Scherzer's contract and on Strasburg's contract. They deferred, almost half of their contract in deferments. You're going to tell me that that's keeping Philly from getting Bryce Harper $2.6 million per year, where they could defer that to later on and pay him that $26 million well after he's done playing? I don't think that's
I want the Padres to just say, you know what, let's take another. And obviously, there were reports yesterday that they're potentially interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. That would be fascinating. Andy, you mentioned kind of what Mets people want to happen here or where, they'd like to see Harper end up. What's the vibe like down there? I know that's such a general, like, classic spring training question, but you've been there now for a couple days. You got a new regime that Brody's brought in. Mickey in year two. Lots of new acquisitions for the Mets. What's it like?
Look at you, Mr. Broadcaster. Andy, what's the vibe in camp? Well, I'll humor your little question. Not being a smart ass for a second, it's a more relevant question this year than it would be most years. And I'm a real jerk because I'm the one that suggested it, that you asked me this. But it's that
that's the lose-lose that I have to deal with every week,
yeah.
Andy.
That's right. It's a little more of a circus atmosphere in a good way this year, because there's been so many years when I covered the Mets on the beat, and you're looking around and you're like, well, there's Marlon Byrd. There's Andrew Brown. What happened to my career? Why aren't I over in Tampa with the Yankees? And, you know, now it's like, oh, there is a boom mic and a camera crew following the GM talking to A-Rod, who are like competing for the most expensive looking pair of shoes and sunglasses. There is Tim Tebow with people like holding his inspirational book out to sign while he's just trying to take life BP. Thick crowd. Nelson, you would be, if you were back there on field 7 today, the crowd that you had to fight through to get onto the field, I've never seen anything like it in Mets. So, you know, Cano's there. You got A-Rod, you got a moment where A-Rod and Cano are buddy-buddy behind the cage, and Brody's part of the conversation, and then Terry Collins comes over, and he knows A-Rod from way back when. And it's like, this is star power here. Like, this is a scene. And there are plenty of years, as I said, in Port St. Lucie where there wasn't. So the story of the day isn't necessarily Jed Lowry's little bit of soreness in his knee, but it's like the circus atmosphere, and that's more of a Yankee thing, and that's part of what they want with Brody. Brody, the entertainer, that piece of his like skill set is here to put the Mets in the headlines. Now, so we talked about this, like the whole Syndergaard Yankees trade thing and winter meetings. It was like whether it was going to happen or not, they had the back page, and that's the vibe down here, and it is different. And it, frankly, it's cool.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, that's what you're seeing every day, right? You're seeing a lot more celebrities involved. You're seeing a lot more Twitter hits. You're seeing a lot more social media buzz about Mets in their camp. And it's not even necessarily about Tim Tebow and that kind of circus. It is about, you know, there's some big decisions to be made. You're looking at Dominic Smith even, you know, like the odd man out coming in great shape. You're looking at all the there's so many little storylines that, to me, are so much cooler than they were just a year ago. Because before it was focused on Mickey Callaway being the new manager and how he was going to change the culture. That culture change already happened a lot last year. And now adding, you know, Brody to the mix, he's full boat and kind of the guy that's in his corner and promoting Mickey's message more so than ever. So I think it's been really cool to see that vibe and how everybody has picked up on it. And with all the new faces, I mean, that could be like kindergarten all over again for some players. You know, you go in there, you don't know anybody, but it seems like they're kind of gelling right away, which is a good
thing. That's the thing. I mean, the average fan, they're probably like, well, great, there's buzz to spring training. Now we just have to win games. But I do feel like those things are connected. The vibe that Andy's describing, the different vibe, more clicks, more cameras, that probably rubs off on the players. And there's probably a more intense vibe to spring training than there has been in years past, as Andy's describing. I think that could end up mattering, Andy.
Yeah, look, I obviously, like, this buzz goes away immediately if they're having if they get out of the gate bad, 5 or 10 games under in May, then it's back to the same old Mets that no one's really paying attention to other than the diehards. But they have some momentum right now, and yeah, like a dyed-in-the-wool fan might be like, who cares, let's win some games, but this is the entertainment business. It doesn't hurt. And again, like, there have been times when you just didn't feel like this was a relevant place where it was in any way like near the epicenter of baseball. And like today, just all this star attention, even Tebow helps a lot. Look, I cannot tell you how many waiters, Uber drivers, what have you, have been like, oh, Tebow, this and that. This guy is more famous than Mike Trout. Obviously, that's like he's more famous than Bryce Harper, probably. So the fact that he's around, that adds to it too. And no, it doesn't win you the division, but you know, we'll take it.
He's also maybe the most famous athlete in Florida.
That's exactly
which helps.
That's
exactly
it. He's
a
Gator
quarterback. The location helps for sure.
Yes. Location's everything.
But just I you know what I would argue, and I don't know that you could even. I'm going out on a limb here. Tim Tebow's the most famous baseball player in the world. And I don't care what his skill set is or if he's ever going to play in the major leagues. David Wright could walk down the street probably in any city other than New York and go unrecognized. And Tebow would blow him out of the water. David Wright, I mean, A-Rod's here. He may be more famous or equal to famous than Tebow. But to me, Tebow's at that level of fame and recognition.
But I guess the point you're making, Andy, is he is the most famous person who just happens to play baseball.
No, he's a baseball player.
Right, but he got famous before baseball. Nothing he's done in the Mets organization has increased his fame.
The Double A All-Star game nod doesn't put him on the map.
I think your point's correct, but it's not like baseball has done it for him.
Yeah. Well, it's like Doug Williams, the famous broadcaster, but he made his name playing Connecticut high school baseball. You know,
he made his name winning a Super Bowl for the Washington Redskins years back.
That's true. Look, I know what you're saying. He's not famous because he's a baseball player, but he is the most recognizable celebrity, the most famous human being playing professional baseball in 2019. That's what I'm saying.
All right. Well, we appreciate the Sports Talk Radio hot take right before we let you go.
That's a freezing cold. That is why even say it? It's so obvious take.
That's part of your take. You're saying it's so obvious, don't even debate it because it's not worth debate, but here's something and now I'm going
to
leave.
Oh, I see. So, no, well, I don't have to leave. Do I
you
have
told
to leave?
Me you have to leave. We've got till 2:45.
What time is it?
It's 2:46.
2:46.
I'm not gonna let you kick me out the door by telling me my take is hot. But, Tebow's famous. And you see what I did. The take with I added heat by denying the heat to the take. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Like by saying, oh, it's so obvious.
This isn't a hot take, but, and it's like, yes, it is.
No, it's not. It's the least controversial thing I could possibly say.
All right, Tebow,
come on.
We're going to let you go.
Why don't we talk about this for another half an hour?
We're going to let you
get David right in the line and see who he thinks is more famous, him or Tim Tebow.
We're going to let you go. You are busy in Port St. Lucie. And
I sound busy.
We're not going to talk about Tim Tebow after you hang up. We're totally not going to talk behind your back.
Promise.
Well, I appreciate the heads up on that so I can preemptively say whatever nonsense you try to say to contradict.
No, we got Twitter questions.
You will be wrong.
Does it help you to know that we care so little about your hot take that we're not even going to continue talking about it?
Yes, it does. I'll take it because I made my point. You've been defeated, and now you can move on like an honorable.
Okay. Goodbye, Andy.
Bye.
All right. So the Twitter questions.
Yep.
Let's begin with Jason Gutierrez because this one is just like a great big picture question. Over or under 93 wins for our Mets, Figgy.
That's a lofty goal, I think. But I do think that everyone in the division got better, except for the Marlins, of course. And I think they're going to beat up on each other a little bit more.
Yeah.
So it spreads out a little more evenly. So I would probably put it more towards 90 than 93. And I know it doesn't seem like a big difference. But I do think that they definitely raised their level from just thinking of them being at 84 wins in Vegas or something like that, where same as last year's odds almost. And to me, they added three or four all-stars with Cano, with Diaz, with, you bring in Jed Lowry, you bring in all these guys that
Jerry's familiar, bring him back.
I mean, these guys are all-star caliber players, so it wasn't like you got some fill-ins. And when we talk about the depth that they added high-quality depth. I mean, they got rid of guys that weren't working out, like Jay Bruce and Swarzak, and look what you added in its place. So I do think that they can push for 90 wins. And honestly, you're a 7-game winning streak from pushing that into the mid-90s.
I was just trying to think, like, obviously things could happen where the National League East doesn't live up to the hype, but I can't remember a year where it just turned out that you had three legit teams in your division other than was the Central 3 or 4 years ago or 4 or 5 years ago where it was the Cubs, Pirates.
And the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm. And I think the Pirates played the Pirates played in the wild card game and lost. That was a crazy year. But that doesn't really happen where divisions have three legit teams because how are you supposed to have a good record when you're losing a lot of games, how do three teams win 90 games? It happened that year, but it's very rare. So, yeah, I would say 89, 90 wins is where I have the Mets. That's a solid season.
It is.
That's a potential wild card, if not division season.
Yeah, and like I said, I think it all comes to fruition with, not like last year where they won, you know, what was it, 11 out of their first 12 games, and you're thinking, okay, pennant race. It's not going to be something that happens early. It's going to be something that happens late, you know, that August, September push, where if they can put a bunch of wins together, put away teams that they're supposed to put away, you know, those three-game series add up. So if you can sweep three-game series in a row, that's 9 wins in a row, that puts you on the map right there to do something special.
That question was from Jason Gutierrez. This one from Robert Z. What were you focusing on the most during the first 2 weeks of spring training? Overall fitness or feel, or did you work on specifics?
Collecting as much meal money as possible, trying to not, you know, cause any waves, but to see how long I could be in camp and make the decision hard for them. That was for me. When guys already have jobs, you're focusing on ramping up slowly and not doing too much. You don't put too much onus in on results. But it's about the work and the prep that you do all before the game, you know, somewhat during the game, because you want to see how it plays out against guys in other uniforms. But a lot of that stuff is kind of predetermined already, like almost how the roster is going to be set. So as a player, what you're doing over there, what you want to do is you want to get the most out of your off-season training. So in other words, you're shifting gears. You went from all the heavy weights and all the, you know, lifting to build that good, strong foundation to now you're doing more baseball-specific activities. So you want to get yourself more flexible. You want to be able to kind of bounce back quicker. So your nutrition changes. Everything changes because now you're starting to kick it into being, instead of being a power lifter, now you're going to be that marathon runner who's right. going to be able to run for a long, long time. And so that's kind of where the young guys will learn about that transition. And when you don't have to go out and prove yourself and try to overthrow and hurt yourself, it's where you put yourself in a really good position to do something that, you know, you're capable of doing before you leave camp.
Andy makes fun of me because I played high school baseball. I'm not sure why that leaves me ready to be made fun of, but I talk about it way too much.
Did he write for the high school newspaper?
No, I didn't. But one of the things that I remember was I wasn't all that talented, so I relied kind of on the eyewash stuff, like if you really hustle out to second base when you take the field, or when you really sprint out that pop-up or ground out. When you're kind of bouncing from team to team, year to year in a big league career, kind of like you did at times, in spring training, are you hoping to catch the eye of a pitching coach or anyone on the training staff where, let's say there's something you do, you are taking a young guy under your wing, or you have a really good bullpen? Like, are you very interested in what a coach, manager, training staff member will come up to you and say?
Everyone needs a sponsor in this game. And so you're looking for one guy that's going to have your back. And if for me, like Ricky Bones was my pitching coach the year before, and he knew what I was capable of doing. So watching me throw a bullpen, and you see a guy who can throw 5 pitches on both sides of the plate, move the ball up, down, all around, and Ricky Bones would tell them about, and he does this in the game. This isn't just for show. And so, you know, the major league manager would kind of pique his interest a little bit that, okay, now let's see where he fits. Where can he be? You know, and not going to be front-end starter, could be back-end, could be a long reliever. And so for me, it's, hey, whatever job's available, I just want to prove that I belong. Right. So you kind of want to always open up eyes. And even if you don't know who's standing behind you, because there have been times where I've had, you know, the owners standing behind me, the GM, the assistant GM, the special assistant to the GM. All it takes is one guy. I mean, for me, when I first got here in 2008, I played catch with Billy Wagner. And it was just to warm him up. He was like, hey, kid, come warm me up. And I was like, all right, let's go play catch. We went out to one of the backfields, we're playing catch, and I'm throwing back and forth with him, and we start throwing breaking balls and stuff. And he's like, man, you've got nasty stuff. And I told him, I said, well, go tell somebody.
Right.
And he literally did. He turned around and talked to some of the pitching coaches, and he would watch my bullpens and say, man, that's going to play at the big league level. And so all it takes is you want that backing. You want them to have more people in your corner so that even when it comes to that decision time and they're voting yay or nay, or, right. you know, if he's on the bubble, you want more guys to be able to say, hey, I think he has a chance.
This question from Jeffrey asks, how about the Mets going after a James Shields on a minor league deal or Homer Bailey? We need depth everywhere since we aren't going for slam dunks like Harper.
Slam dunks like Harper.
I'm not sure how, like, I like Jeffrey. We talk on Twitter a decent amount, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure James Shields and Bryce Harper belong in the same question because, like, I understand what he's saying. Obviously, you're not signing Bryce Harper, mm-hmm. but that doesn't make it any more necessary to have James Shields on your roster.
Right. There's a balance.
Maybe, and I agree that they could use the proven veteran talent in a minor league deal. That's always the low risk, high reward situation, but What do you think?
Well, just like we talked around here before, that they have gone out and signed a lot of veteran major league players to be on that AAA roster with, you know, minor league deals with big league invites. But if they have more than 5 years, they can opt out right after spring training, and they can opt out again in May 1st. So that leaves your team all of a sudden scrambling to fill a roster. So if you have three or four of these guys and there's jobs that become available somewhere else, and that's kind of where you're at when you have more than 5 years of service time at the big leagues, you get to determine, you know, how long you stay in the minor leagues. You can just opt out of your minor league contract. And that's, to me, one of the things that you have to be leery of, is that you want to be able to have that mix where you have those veteran guys kind of teaching the younger guys that you have under contract right now. So the Oswalts, you know, the Flexins, those guys that are under contract and that you want to see them take the next step so that they are under contract for the next 4 years. You want to have a couple of guys that they can look up to and see how it's done and continue to learn from them.
The key part of adding depth, to your point, is the fact that they very well may never play a game for you. You know, we loved all these signings, Hector Santiago, Rajay Davis, Sedeny Echevarria, all of the veteran signings that they've made. However, Gregor Blanco is part of that too. Mm-hmm. Like you said, if the Mets decide there's not room for them on the roster, they're gone. You know, Rajay Davis, as solid a signing as that was, the Mets may not need him because you got Keon Broxton, who's already behind Juan Lagares, who's already behind Brandon Nimmo and Michael Conforto. So there's no downside to those signings, but they have to make sense to you. If you're James Shields and you're looking at that rotation, you're probably like, there are other rotations in the big leagues where I think I actually have a better shot of breaking camp with that team.
Yeah, you sit there and think, okay, well, I got six guys I have to beat out for one spot. That's not good chances, especially when, you know, you're going to be making a considerable amount money more than a guy who's just going to be on a rookie deal.
Right.
So you have to always do what's in your best interest. And again, there's guys who kind of want to be a part of something like that because they know that if someone gets hurt, you're going to be the guy that gets called up. That was my role for years, was that, you know, if it didn't happen for me opening day, then I was the first guy available, whether it was a reliever, whether it was a starter, I was going to be the guy that got the call. So that made it attractive for me to sign back again and again. Until after my second year of doing that and my third year in 2010, where they were like, listen, if you clear, and I'm like, we've done this dance for 2 years. So there's not a lot of guys at 35 plus who want to sit around and bide their time in Syracuse, New York in April.
Yesterday, with our coordinating producer, Dave Mandel, I was sitting around and I was trying to figure out the 25 man because we keep talking about like JD Davis. And I was like, well, is he even going to make the team? Or if they carry three catchers with Darno and Mesoraco, you know, that could complicate things. So we're going through the list, and I come out to the last roster spot, position player-wise, which is, you know, Broxton, Echevarria, JD Davis, Rajay Davis. Like, one of those guys can make the team. And Dave made the point. He was like, well, the whole point of this is no team breaks camp fully healthy, right? So one of these guys will slide through the cracks. And then today we heard that Jed Lowrie was having some pain in the back of his knee, and that's like, Echevarria. That's why you have him. Because I was saying yesterday, well, Echevarria could play second, he could play short, he could play third. So can Jed Lowrie. So you're not going to have both of those guys on the roster. And there's a lot of guys on the roster where they wouldn't have two of them.
Yep.
But injuries make this worthwhile. Chris Buckley, where is Todd Frazier going to get most of his playing time? If Lowrie is healthy and plays consistently and Alonso makes the team, it seems like Todd could be the odd man out on most days. This to me feels like the situation. Peter Alonso, no matter what Brody says, is most likely not going to break camp with the team. That's just a sound business decision, and it's just a couple weeks' time. Todd Frazier could play first base for the first couple weeks. We keep saying that. That doesn't mean much because that's a tiny portion of the season. So let's say after 2 weeks, Nelson, Peter Alonso gets called up, and he's playing first base every day. Where's Todd Frazier playing?
Todd Frazier becomes the Michael Kadire of 2019. He basically is going to be the guy coming off the bench and being able to spell guys in certain matchups, certain situations where they look at some history against a certain pitcher and they like the matchup and put Frazier in there, move Lowrie around. Maybe Rosario gets a day off. You find a way to try and keep him as ready as possible, because for these guys, I mean, we saw what happened with Reyes. Reyes was so used to playing every day that when he tried that role, he was terrible at it, because you're getting one opportunity to make one swing matter every fourth, fifth day. And it's very difficult to do. So I don't know how well Frazier could adapt to that role. I don't know how well McNeil can adapt to a role like that. And so we keep saying that the depth is a good thing, but the depth is only a good thing if you have a nice rotation of guys getting enough playing time
and guys
to stay
sharp. Handle that role.
Absolutely, because it's difficult for a guy to go everyday starter. And it's not like Todd Frazier's 36, 37, 38 years old where he's past his prime and can't contribute. He had some injuries last year. When he was on the field, I think he made the defense at least a lot better than what we had been seeing from Reyes playing third base and Flores playing third base. So I think he still has a lot to prove. And it's difficult for a player who's at that point in his career where you now all of a sudden have to prove that you're a major league everyday player. And then when they come to you and say, well, we're going to bring up the kid and let the kid play. Now, if the kid earns it, Peter Alonso, and he tears it up in the Grapefruit League and they decide to stay with him. Because remember, Brody said he's taking the best 25 north. He doesn't care about contract status.
Yeah, I think partially that was to appease the fan base, though.
I do, but at the same time, I look at it this way. His contract is based on wins, is based on production. Uh-huh. So I don't think he has an issue with an $8 million contract of Todd Frazier's being kind of kept on the bench rather than the production that you may get out of Peter Alonso. Now, if Alonso struggles and he has to go back down, hey, that happens pretty
And Todd
quick.
Frazier can still be a productive
absolutely.
Hitter.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And I think that's the part about the rotation thing that I think is going to be so important because they said that last year. And to me, it was lip service because we saw guys playing 26, 30, 32 games in a row where we thought they would have a much better rotation of outfielders and infielders, and they had the depth to do that. I think that depth is even better this year, but they've got to find a way to keep everybody fresher and keep everybody more involved.
Yeah, and Mickey's already talked about that. You know, that's really going to be one of the big challenges of his season as manager in year two. But here's the reality, and I was just thinking about this while you're making the point about Frazier. If Todd Frazier plays sporadically, let's say he plays 100 games this year at the big league level, puts up similar numbers to what he did last year, that's a minor league offer next offseason as a free agent. Like, yeah. That's what we're seeing, mm-hmm. is these guys who are clearly big league players, who have had success at the big league level, are getting minor league offers because no team wants to risk any money on that lower tier. That's why yesterday was bothering me when everybody's takeaway was, oh, free agency's fine. Manny Machado got 10 years, $300 million. Well, ask Mark Reynolds, Derek Dietrich, these guys who can't find a job or haven't been able to find jobs for quite a long period of time, and then suddenly, there you go, they have a minor league offer, and that's the best they can get.
Yeah.
So
it's sad. It really is. And I think that's one of the biggest points is that, you know, the upper echelon, it used to be, you know, 5% of the players make 80% of the money on a team. Everybody talks about, oh, major league players are averaging, you know, over $2.5-3 million. But that money is being made by 5% of the team. Everybody else is on one-year deals and minor league, you know, or, you know, rookie contracts, somewhere between rookie and arbitration contracts, especially now, because they're trying to control the costs and those years and adding up and going to arbitration. So it does make it difficult for guys who have kind of earned it, and not kind of earned it, they have earned it. You know, a guy like Todd Frazier, a guy like, you know, where you should be seeing him in a big league uniform with a position that's solely his. They're kind of getting weeded out of the game because they want to give the younger generation more chances, more opportunity. And it happened back when I started playing. I saw some veteran players who were kind of, you know, kind of getting pushed out for the younger guys. And you're sitting here thinking, well, at the time it was $275,000 to $300,000. Wasn't a lot of money. Where these guys are going to get $1 or $2 million. And they're like, well, we'll take our chance with the kid making $300,000 because he's not going to play very much behind a Scott Rolen, or, you know, we can see what happens with that.
Well, you could see, like, this isn't a decision the Mets have to make right now because they have both on their roster. But, like, if the Mets were ever faced with the decision, J.D. Davis or Todd Frazier, that's a classic example. That's two guys who can kind of give you the same type of thing. One's cheaper than the other. Boom, decisions made. Mm-hmm. Like, there's less value on what you've done in the past now.
One's younger. One they just gave up three prospects for. Right. One is a guy that they can see. You know, they see J.D. Davis with a future in a Met uniform. His ability to play third base, especially if you're going to have Alonso on the other side, that's a guy under control for the next 4 or 5 years. Where, you know, with Todd Frazier, this is his last year in a Met uniform, unless he does something that warrants another contract.
The last thing I want to end on here, Nelson, is something we touched on last week, and Not that we didn't give it enough time, but I just, the more I talk about Dom Smith, the more intrigued I am by his story. Because we were reminded in the newsroom today he's just 23 years old. Mm-hmm. And if you think that Dom Smith has gotten his chance and failed, I'm not sure that's correct. Because when he was first brought up, it was probably premature. And we were clamoring that it should happen. I want to get a look at this guy, bring him up. And they brought him up, and he wasn't great. Then last year, he was forced into a position where he had to play some outfield. Maybe that was punishment for, you know, the fact that he was late in spring training and never really got it together, got hurt. Well, that's fine. But his growth, in my opinion, has been stunted to this point. Am I saying that Dom Smith should get the first base job and break spring training as the starting first baseman for the Mets? No. Do I believe his best chance is to have a really good spring, get traded somewhere else? Yes. But I just, it's interesting for me to think about this, Nelson. Let's say he is James Loney, which was one of the first comps that we heard with mm-hmm. Dom Smith. What happens now? Because James Loney as a player may not be exciting enough for a team to take a 23-year-old and put him over your Peter Alonso top shelf prospect. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean Dom Smith's a bad player. So as an organization, do you accept failure, trade him? Or do you still have to view him like a first round pick and say, we should be able to give this guy a chance if he earns it in spring training?
Yeah, I think Brody has come in and has tried to put his stamp on the organization. And we heard about how there was no prospects, no depth, no anything. Well, he's gotten rid of a lot of first-round draft picks. Mm. And Dom is one of the guys that he kept that's not named Michael Conforto or Brandon Nimmo. So now he's not that he's in that caliber because he hasn't earn that playing time or that right the way that those two guys have. But Dom Smith is only 23 years old. He still has options, so he's going to go back down to Syracuse and be that backup guy just in case something happens over at first base, and he has to be available. It's a difficult thing. I remember I was with the Pirates, and we had this guy at first base, Carlos Rivera. Sweetest fielding first baseman I've ever played with, could pick it, could do everything. They brought him up at 23 to be a defensive replacement late in ball games for Craig Wilson. Craig Wilson would take his three swings, try and hit a bomb. And then here comes Carlos Rivera trying to just field his position, and he would get one at bat a week on a Sunday day game against the closer of a team when we were down. And it stunted his growth immensely. He never got to prove that he was a major league hitter because you look on the baseball card and his stats were, you know, hitting under 200. Well, he didn't get much opportunity to get those reps and get those at-bats that he would need. Dom Smith has had some opportunities, and you have never seen the consistency, whether it be on the ability to hit the ball the other way. It's the approach, I think, more so than anything that I've been kind of disappointed with, where in the first year, I got it. He proved he could hit down at the minor league level. He had a nice batting average. He hit for some power. He wanted to show that he had big league power. Hit 9 home runs in 170 at-bats or something like that. So when you start thinking, oh, well, if he does it, you know, 3 times, that's 27 home runs. Yeah, but he sold out a lot. He cheated on fastballs and fastball counts, looked for certain pitches in certain areas. And if he swung and missed, so what? It was that time of the year where it was September and it really wouldn't have mattered. Coming into the next year where he had the battle for a position and he put himself behind the eight ball, that is where everything kind of came to a screeching halt and he had to kind of earn that respect all over again. This year, there's so many more pieces involved that I don't think he should kind of, I think now is the time that he has to almost reinvent himself in a way. And it ain't about losing weight. It's about going out there and playing so well that you have to force their hand. There's no other way to do it. Famous phrase that I used to be told all the time, you don't like it, play better. Because there's 29 other teams that are looking for a first baseman or, you know, a guy that can come in and be a part of their team. And if he's swinging the bat well enough, if he's playing well enough defense, if he's doing all the little things that anybody else calls around and says, hey, listen, you guys don't need him. He's buried with you guys. We'll give you something that you do need. We'd like to get Dom Smith out of there. That's who you're playing for, right?
Yeah, I think that's fascinating. And I go back to last year and I feel like it was a fundamental mistake by the Mets and by Mickey Callaway not to utilize the terrible June that they had and the fact that they were out of it for the entire second half of the season and just play him for 10 straight days or a week.
Yeah, no, that,
you know, like, that would have helped.
Yeah, that's where you have to do it. That's where you get to see, and he would have the one game in Colorado, he hits a ball the other way, and it's Colorado, so it's huge. He hits a double, and you're thinking, oh, okay, that's the swing. And then the next time he goes out there, which is probably 3 days later, and he's playing a position he shouldn't be playing, and he's overswinging and strikes out three times, and he looks, you know, he looked awful some of his at-bats. And that's what I mean by the approach has to be better. If you're going to go with the one swing, one pitch, and one location kind of approach, you better not miss it. And
right.
He did that way too many times.
The other side of that also, though, is that, you know, Mickey Callaway, if he were here, might say, well, our second half, the fact that we won a lot of games in the second half, is something that Mickey's been talking about a lot in this spring, saying we brought optimism with us to camp from the second half of the season last year. So you make this point a lot, and it's a good point to make. GMs, managers, it's not just the decisions they care about. They have to win in order to keep doing what they do. So it's easy for me to sit here and say Mickey should have played Dom Smith for two straight weeks at first base. It's harder for Mickey Callaway to actually do it, because if he doesn't think Dom Smith is up to task, then that's just giving away an at-bat or giving away your first base position on a nightly basis. Like, that's not in Mickey Callaway's best interest either.
Yeah, and the thing that was hard for Mickey Callaway was Jay Bruce was being crammed down his throat to maybe moving to first base, because if all your outfielders were healthy, then you needed to have Bruce's bat
enhance
in the lineup.
Trade value too, potentially.
As well, but you had to have Bruce's bat in the lineup. Okay, he signed to a 3-year deal, so it wasn't like he wasn't going to be playing. You wanted to find a way to maximize all the, and especially with losing Cespedes, well, Bruce was your next best power hitter. You needed him to be in the lineup and get the at-bats and get the reps. Even though he started out so poorly last season, you wanted him to kind of end on a high note a la Conforto and have a good sense of coming off the offseason, maybe working some more at first base. And then all of a sudden you get here and, hey, he's gone. You know, right as soon as Brody gets here and he's gone. Now you don't have to worry about it. Now he probably thinks, well, in this case, had I known that we were going to be moving Bruce, or if we could move Bruce, then I would have been playing Dominic Smith, because we have to see what the kid can do, because you know Peter Alonso has kind of leapfrogged him right now in the pecking order. And it happens. It happens a lot in the game. But Peter Alonso is still unproven. He's done tremendous down at the minor league level. He's crushed the ball at every chance he's been given an opportunity. Now he has to do it when, you know, when the time is right, especially in spring training, and if he does make the team.
Peter Alonso is now ahead in the pecking order, as you mentioned, to Dom Smith, and he's also older than Dom Smith.
Yes.
So it's like Dom was never a prospect ahead of Peter Alonso now. You know, it's just, it seems like somehow you have more urgency to bring Alonso up to the big leagues than you do Dom. So we'll see what happens to Dom. Here's a cheesy segue. Speaking of guys coming off the bench and being thrust into a starting role, thank you for coming on the last 3 weeks or whatever it's been. We appreciate it. Always good insight coming from you. And Andy had to call, give us his hot take from Port St. Lucie today. We appreciate it. And Baseball Night in New York coming up at 6 o'clock tonight. So a lot of Doug and Nelson. If you watch both or listen to both, we appreciate it. Thank you.
I appreciate it as well. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back talking Mets next week.